This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Tan Chung Han and Kusu Chuang. With the top business stories of the day, we have crude oil, handbags and internet giants. Let's see how we can weave that story.
Let that sink in for a little while. Crude oil, handbags and
internet giants. Separate stories, really.
Not necessarily related.
All right, because you don't want crude oil in your handbags.
You wouldn't know.
Okay.
What are you on about, Sharad?
Anyways, all right. So starting with crude oil here, you've got the two largest oil-producing countries of the 24 that agreed to cut production, Russia and Saudi Arabia. They have released statements, separate statements, saying they are considering extending their production cut that is ongoing right now into 2018. Just to set some context here, they said the previous deal at the end of last year, the deadline for the current deal is set to expire, or the deadline is coming up next month. All right, so now there's talk between Saudi Arabia and Russia that they are considering extending this production cut deal into next year.
I mean, West Texas is trading somewhere about $45 a barrel, and Brent is somewhere around about $46 a barrel. And I mean, let's be honest, you know, oil producing nations, oil prices being where they are, does not benefit oil producing nations, Malaysia included. And the only way to, I guess, to address this this price situation is for one of two things to happen, right? The American shale production engine to, I guess, slow down. Three things: demand to pick up, or for the big producers to cut back production and ensure less supplies in the system. So I think all three things are moving, but for where OPEC is concerned, they're trying to extend this logically for another year, because I think the deadline runs out soon.
The significance of Russia is that it's a non-OPEC oil producer, isn't it?
Correct, yeah, exactly. And so you've got, you know, other countries, even Malaysia as well, we have got we've got a production cut as well. So we have a clip from the Petronas CEO, Dato' Wan Zulkifli Arifin, saying that, you know, with the ongoing agreement that's due until the end of June this year, you know, if there's an extension, he might be willing to play along as well.
We have committed to a 20,000 barrels per day cut, and that's our commitment. So, you know, if there is an extension of the arrangement, of course we are committed to continue with the same production cut.
And that was Petronas CEO Dato' Wan Zulkifli Arifin saying that, you know, Malaysia is committed to that production cut, you know, and even if there is an extension. And as we speak right now, Brent is actually pushing back up towards $50 a barrel, now at $49.34 a barrel.
I want to cite this this particular individual cited on the third page of the Financial Daily, Dr. Feridun Feshiraki. And I just want to say, if I had a name like that, I'd feel pretty cool, right? You know what I mean? Dr. Feshiraki.
You keep wanting to say it over and over again.
It's quite exotic, right?
It's Dr. Feshiraki.
Yeah. Anyway, so he reckons that even with these current production cuts, you know, due to last until 2018, it's not going to be nearly enough. And, you know, you'd have to agree, because, I mean, Petronas doesn't... 20,000 barrels a day might sound a lot, but actually it doesn't really move the needle. But everybody's got to move in the same direction. Mm-hmm. The Iranians, you know, the Russians, the Saudis.
Compliance, right?
Compliance, right, mm-hmm. Yeah. And, you know, everybody wants to protect their market share. So you've got the whole impasse to come as well.
Yeah, but I think it's interesting also, because, I mean, this is not necessarily new, because there have been rumblings, you know, from other OPEC and non-OPEC members about possibly extending this deadline. I mean, heck, they even had it from the first quarter of this year. But now you've got the likes of Saudi Arabia and Russia really lending impetus to it. I think it's interesting to see how oil prices move from here. I mean, real quick, just to bring it back home, how does that relate to us? You know, obviously down to the average motorist on the street, you guys, you know, listening to this in your cars right now, if this deal doesn't work or markets don't really buy into this narrative, then, you know, I mean, there's talk about oil falling down below $40 a barrel, then it'd be cheaper for us to drive around.
$2.11. You know what that is? That's the price of RON 95 right now.
Right.
You know why I know? Because it's weekly check. So that's what it means for us. Do you know what I mean? But I guess on a more macro level, it's really the ringgit. And I think we've gone from about 444 odd to about 432, 432 in a bit. But now we're kind of come back to about 433, 434. So, I mean, we've had a nice bout of about some ringgit strength. I think 2.5% in about a month. Annualized about 30%. That's quite nice. But it's not going to happen. So, you know, obviously the lower oil prices go, the more detrimental it is to the ringgit.
Yeah, certainly, and also to our fiscal coffers, right? But then also, I mean, just to kind of give the other side of, give a different perspective here, you've got the likes of Citigroup and also Goldman Sachs. You know, they are saying that, well...
Do you believe what Goldman Sachs is?
I mean, I'm just putting it out there, man.
Whatever Goldman says, it's just move in the opposite direction.
They
might have a bone to pick
with you. So that's strong, but I'm just saying, you know, I'm just reporting, and also Citigroup and Goldman actually say that the oil market, the supply is actually getting tighter. All right, so, you know, and they see a great buying opportunity there. You know, I mean, it's currently below $50 a barrel. So that's their side of the argument then. Okay?
So anytime Goldman says go long, you got to be sure that they've got their longs in place already.
Okay.
Yeah.
Moving on.
So that's quite disparaging, but it is. Yeah.
But it is true according to Kusu Chuang. Okay, Coach buys Kate Spade. Does that put more buck into their bottom line and their handbag, as it were?
Coach buys a spade. Can you imagine the visual analogy? Coach buys a spade. Why would you want to do that, right?
All right, so you got Coach, the fashion brand. Let me just say this first. So Coach will acquire Kate Spade for $2.4 billion. So that's the headline right there. I did a quick survey among those members of our staff who are perhaps more familiar with Coach and Kate Spade.
Three guys in a studio talking about handbags, right? What do we know about handbags? Well, you know what I mean?
So I speak for yourself about your blissful ignorance.
Well, you're
married. Have you never given your wife a handbag?
Okay.
Have you bought a handbag from somewhere other than Petaling Street?
Let's just put it this way. Because I'm from Penang, right?
Because you're very classy. Yeah. Moving back to the story very quickly. How is this? This is a business deal.
Yeah, right? It is a business deal. And so
$2.4 billion.
Yeah, $2.4 billion.
That's a lot of money.
But Coach not been doing well. I mean, that's the whole point, right? So how do they have the money to buy this?
That's the perennial problem. Every time, there was a time some years ago when Coach had some brand cachet, right? But as with a lot of brands that try and go mainstream and try and globalize their markets, I mean, Michael Kors is the latest example, right? You kind of dilute the brand, you dilute quality, you dilute, and then you've got price erosion and stuff like that. And that's the kind of stuff that has ailed Coach in recent years. Mm. And I think they're trying to invigorate top line by buying Kate Spade.
Right, and so from the sentiment that I got from our more informed staff members here at BFM, so Coach is apparently luxury.
It's an entry-level luxury.
There we go, Chuang.
Okay.
So it's affordable luxury, you know, but yeah, they are seeing, you know, their business basically being disrupted either by the online business or the online, those online portals, or also just by the falling foot traffic.
This is what happens. You got three guys in the studio on a wet Tuesday morning talking about handbags.
The falling foot traffic in the malls. Okay, there we go. So, you know, they are basically trying to buy Kate Spade. And it's not just Kate Spade. They have gone on a bit of a shopping spree. You know, they have bought other brands as well, like maybe you guys know
Stuart Weitzman.
Yeah, Stuart Weitzman. Yep. You guys know that one?
Designer footwear, man. I know these
things
as well.
Look at you,
Chuang. They paid $574 million. I know that as well because it's what it says in my research.
You know what's really interesting about Coach, and I have some numbers here. As of July 2016, last year, Coach had 480 stores in Asia out of 520 international locations. So high concentration of stores in Asia as opposed to globally.
And yet the three of us totally missed the whole Coach.
We missed that shovel base.
Yeah. Don't they do anything for men? No.
I don't know. I guess not. Maybe not. Yeah.
Boots with spurs.
Okay, so...
Dude, your imagination needs to calm down right now. Don't give them any ideas.
So I guess one of the reasons why Coach is buying Spade is because, to quote the CEO of Coach, Kate Spade has a unique brand attitude that's youthful with much higher penetration of millennials, fashionable, fun, feminine, with a bit of whimsy.
Sounds like a bit of whimsy,
you know?
That's your middle name.
Whimsical.
Okay, we'll be back with more business news after this, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.